Help yourself by doing a pack redesign that's an evolution, not a revolution. You're keeping it more similar than going for that big change, even though it looks like you're doing more if you make more changes. If you make less changes, it makes it easier for consumers to find you. Sometimes being lazy is being successful. So you're more familiar, it's an evolution, you're keeping what represents the brand quite strong. Just leave the packaging alone. Evolutions rather than revolutions, that's always, yeah.
Packaging design should seduce, inform, and even save the planet. I'm Hernan Braverman, and this is Branderman, the podcast where I talk with experts to uncover what it actually takes to make a positive impact on consumers, the market, and society. Warning, keep this podcast out of the reach of close-minded marketers and designers. Before the interview, let me introduce my design agency.
Brands with purpose. Human, agile, honest brands that leave no one indifferent. Tridimage creates and revitalizes brands to imagine and shape the future. Tridimage, the branding and packaging design agency for bold brands.
Today I had the pleasure of speaking with William Caruso, Senior Marketing Scientist at the Ehrenberg Bass Institute from Adelaide, Australia. Will boasts an extensive research background, having conducted projects from a diverse array of local and international clients. His core areas of research expertise include packaging redesigns, shopper behavior, and retail merchandising. Additionally, his experience in distinctive asset measurement encompasses large-scale multi-country projects. Will also authored a chapter on building physical availability in building distinctive brand assets. In this episode, Will imparts valuable insights about the factors contributing to successful packaging redesigns. He shares his research findings on the impact of pack design consistency, the importance of familiarity in purchase decisions, and the distinctions between evolutionary and revolutionary redesigns. Today with me, Will Caruso. Each of us is a container of ideas, projects, and dreams. However, we can't read the label when we are inside the jar. Will, what do you think your label says, or what would you like it to say?
I'd like my label to say, I guess, research design specialist in helping designers make informed decisions when they make packaging redesign decisions. Currently, I reckon my label is senior marketing scientist, I said specializing in packaging redesign practices.
And how did your passion for marketing and consumer psychology begin?
That's an interesting question. I really did like design when I was in high school. I did a lot of design-based subjects, and I actually picked marketing because the way it was sold to us at the time was you got to work on campaigns and essentially influence consumers to buy. I didn't even have any idea about the Ehrenberg Bass or anything at the time. It was just, yeah, solely picking something based on, oh yeah, I like design, I like selling things, and I guess this seems like a good possible thing to do. It wasn't actually really planned at all.
And how was the path that led you from studying marketing to focusing on marketing science?
I guess it was just kind of a bit of a natural progression. You start seeing law-like patterns in how consumers behave, and it kind of then does make sense to think about how then your marketing can appeal to the majority of the market, rather than picking a small segment and trying to learn about that and then just tailoring advertising to that. So it was like the consistency and the easiness maybe that I first saw when I started studying marketing to take that progression in how you actually approach marketing rather than that more individualistic type of look. And obviously I did study a lot of basically math in my earlier years, and obviously seeing those This was actually really cool to say, okay, we can actually look at how consumers behave and put some formulas and numbers behind that to be able to not necessarily completely predict with some accuracy that behaviors aren't drastically going to change year on year. And then we can use that to our advantage when we're designing communication, because once people remember something, they're not going to forget it straight away. So we can kind of understand those patterns.
Great. Decoding consumers' relationship with design is a complex challenge. How much about design do you need to know as a marketing researcher?
I'd like to say that you do need to know a fair bit, but that's not necessarily to get the results across from the market research that I do. It's more to put yourself into their shoes. You need some basic understanding to be able to translate some of the results that you get as a market researcher into something that's easily digestible for them. It's a journey for both sides as well, not just one telling the other what to do, because there's multiple different ways or creative ways that you can do things. And yeah, design is really good for that.
What inspired your research into packaging redesigns, and what impact do you aim for your work to have?
This space is really, I guess, under research when we started looking at, okay, what are designers doing on pack, or what's actually happening in the packaging space? And it became quite clear that from marketing science or even a market research type of side, where we take a different approach where we'll look at all the different redesigns that essentially have happened and trying to see what's actually happening and then what might be actually successful. And because I guess redesigns happen quite internally to a company, they might only do one or two or three maybe across, say, a 10-year type of period. And because they're not happening that often, there's not really that big database that you can look at just to say, okay, this is what you need to do to determine to be successful and this is what you shouldn't do. So that's what inspired me to look at the packaging redesign space, is because there wasn't actually much information around. The aim for my work would be essentially to help designers and even marketers understand what packaging can and can't do and help them just make some better decisions.
Why do packaging redesign occur, and why do many of them fail?
The main reason why packaging redesigns occur is a lot of brands want to modernize their pack design. If you're constantly changing to be more modern and marketers are happy when more gets changed, essentially then when it hits the shelf, consumers will start seeing a lot of different packaging. And that just means they have to relearn what they've used before past to actually purchase the brand. Because from a consumer perspective, you might interact with the pack maybe once or twice in the actual purchase situation. And then obviously if it's a really fast moving consumer product like chocolate, you probably eat it close to straight away. Something like detergent, you might multiple uses, but really thinking about that packaging beyond it's just the detergent I buy might happen like once, and it really happens super, super quick. So if you change something, and it could be quite as simple as just the complete packaging color, and then consumers can't find that, that's why a lot of them actually do fail.
What do you emphasize understanding how memory works and how consumers shop in creating successful packaging redesigns?
If you're thinking about something all the time and someone else is only thinking about it once or twice, something that you might think consumers really care about, they might. As marketers, we're looking at our logo all the time and we say, oh, that font is looking outdated. We need to change our font in our logo. But in actual fact, consumers maybe, they don't really care too much about the font. They're only looking at it maybe once or twice. Understanding how the mind works in general, from a consumer's perspective, they've got multiple other things in their mind. So it's like a brand manager thinking about their brand is probably a little bit abnormal. And we try to get them to understand that if they were to think about another brand maybe that they don't work with, then how would they make those decisions? We focus so much on memories because if you build those memory structures, it's great. Like the bigger brands have those packaging design elements that consumers use to recognize the product, and that's done through consistency. And the only way you can build that in the long term is by having a pack design that's super, super consistent and reinforces your brand identity. If you're constantly changing that, then it's very hard to actually do that. And then understanding that, it becomes a little bit easier then to how you can create successful packaging redesigns. Consumers shop super quick, both online and in store. So they're really using those mental structures to make those decisions. And then from that, you can say, okay, what are those elements that consumers use to recognize the brand? When you understand that, it will then help you make more informed decisions because you're not going to change something that represents that brand. So that's why we focus so much on memory, because it's something that takes a long time to build. And yeah, you don't want to just have to start again from scratch.
Why is it critical for brand managers and designers to distinguish between packaging elements representing the brand, messaging devices, and creative devices?
Is because it allows someone then to understand, okay, our brand has these elements which represent the brand. So they could be, okay, we've got a character, we've got a tagline, we might obviously have a logo shape or something similar along those lines, like an image-based asset. These represent our brand. So these things are consistent. They should be kept consistent on pack, consistent across the range, and then show these things consistently also in things that reach non-brand buyers. So that's in advertising. So you help, obviously, those people in the category make the link, and hopefully when they come into the category, they'll pick your product because those are the things that represent the brand to them. Messaging devices, why we classify these different to branding devices is because these things might have to just be on packaging for whatever reason. It could be a gluten-free variant. So it's a message that's pushing across, obviously, the ingredients of that kind of product. Or it could be like if you're doing detergent again, it could be to wash 50 loads of washing. So it's something like pushes across a message that consumers can use or understand. Yep, this is good for this reason. And the last one is creative devices. So these are those other things that might be on packaging. This is where designers have a lot more freedom. It's what they can be creative with. That's why trying to classify them into those three buckets allows a designer to really understand these represent the brand. This is what we have to say for a message. And these are the stuff we can have a lot more fun with.
Why is familiarity a key driver to purchase?
If you're familiar with something, you're more likely to actually buy that product because consumers in that shopping environment, if they've got that familiarity, they've got that kind of confidence that they know what that product is. If you're changing things that represent your brand, which is like decreasing that familiarity, consumers are quite simply less likely to pick you up because they think you're something different. When I see a packaging and it's got the before and after shot and they're completely different, I always think to myself, why didn't they just launch a new brand? Like, it's not very familiar from what we or what we expect. It's, oh, they've done all that work before in the past. And yeah, they've decreased that familiarity.
Can you describe the method you developed to measure packaging design consistency?
Looking at essentially before and after images, as I spoke about before, and it was looking at the visual prominence of certain elements that make up that pack and then doing a comparison of what changed. So, for example, if we had Doritos, for example, it's quite a big well-known brand. If they were to, like, their logo maybe takes up half the packaging, for example, if they were to change that logo, say by 50%, we would then determine that that packaging's changed essentially by 50%. Obviously, that's super simplistic because there's 15 to 20 different elements that make up a pack, but it was really looking at the size of elements before on a pack, what was essentially on it, and then what was actually changed.
And according to your familiarity index, when do you consider a package redesign revolutionary and when it is considered evolutionary?
As a benchmark, if you're keeping 80% of the pack the same, that it's an evolution. But it also then depends on what you're actually changing. It's not as clear cut just to say, okay, 80% like that cutoff, because, you know, if something looks 80% similar, if you even think about that, 8 out of 10 things would be the same. It looks like it did before. But then if you think about what they actually take off on the pack, so if, say they took off the logo, that could still be 80% similar, but it doesn't look like the brand anymore. So I don't really like to say this number will exactly mean that it's an evolution, and this number will mean it's a revolution. If we like to think about it, you've got five elements on pack that represent the brand, and you keep all those five elements on the new pack, and you just slightly modify some things so it looks maybe a little bit more up to date in a certain way, then you would say that's an evolution. If you had five elements that represent the brand on pack and you only keep one, I would say that's a revolution.
What key factors contribute to successful packaging redesigns?
It really depends on what you're using to determine success. So I'll answer that bit first. When we looked at some of the redesign outcomes, obviously intuitive from a market research perspective, when I first started this, I was like, yep, every redesign must increase sales. But then taking a step back, I was like, okay, what happens if sales weren't the goal of the redesign? What happens if they had to take something off pack, maybe like government regulations said they couldn't show this anymore on pack, or something might have happened within the culture of the country and it could be like, okay, showing these depictions of these people on pack would be seen to upset a minority group, for example. So we're going to take that off the pack. Then success to them is we're just not going to lose sales. Distinctive asset research obviously is what we do a lot at the Ehrenberg Bass Institute. And obviously of those redesign cases that I looked at, there was 240 of them across obviously the globe. A key outcome was, yeah, performing that distinctive asset research. But success didn't always mean increasing the sales. What we found interesting was if you did not have a redesign budget put aside, then you were more likely to have those successful pack redesigns. If you think about that intuitively, yeah, it does make sense, right? If you don't have a budget, you haven't got to spend it, you're going to be more critical of the decisions that you're making. And what we did find interesting was if you didn't listen to the person that was the most experienced in the room, that was quite a crazy finding. But yeah, hopefully it doesn't upset people. But if you just think about it, that yeah, the most maybe experienced person in the category might not be the best person to ask. And then back to what we spoke about before is probably because they've had a lot of vested interest in it for a long time and they know a lot more than what the average consumer does. So yeah, just like I like to think when I first looked at it, having more experience or working in an industry for a longer period of time, that should have been a clear indicator of success. You're going to make more successful decisions because you've been in the industry for longer. But in actual fact, we found a slightly negative relationship with success. So yeah, maybe the new guy, get him to comment on what he thinks might be the better redesign decision rather than someone that's been there for about 10 years.
What is the worst redesign crime you have ever seen or perhaps committed?
I haven't really committed any crime in terms of redesign myself. Some of the ones I've seen that have committed crimes, but they're only like for a limited time, which is like, you know, those like limited edition packs that you see? We've teamed up with a brand for a sponsorship and for a month, we're going to throw out all of our brand assets and just link it to this partnership that we've got. And that's probably the biggest crime I do actually see is you've got this great opportunity when you're reaching all these new people because you've got that interesting hype and awareness. They're actually trialing your product because they're probably going to actually buy it for whatever reason, but then you've been a bit criminal in terms of you've just ignored all your other brand identity and just made it completely hard for yourself. Yeah, your product might sell out, but what happens to the other 11 months of the year? There's that lost opportunity there to build those structures. And if I ever read the first few lines of a publicity piece that they write about the redesign, and it says, packaging redesigned for the first time in 20 years. And then I think, okay, that's instantly like just a bit of a red flag for me to be like, okay, what did they do? So hopefully hopefully it was an evolution, not a revolution. But yeah, when they're changing something for the first time in 20 years, it's like, why now? Why not 15 years ago, 10 years ago? What makes it so special about now? It really does make you question that, yeah, that could be pretty criminal.
Whether on the shelf or on the virtual cart, packaging breaches your product and consumer expectations. Redesigns should not come at the expense of packaging familiarity.
Will, I have a proposal for you. Let's play a game. As you are aware, a table tennis table is often found in creative studios. Here's how it works. I'll ask you a series of quick questions, and you'll need to choose between two concepts. If you'd like, you can also explain your reasoning behind each choice. Are you ready for Brandersman table tennis?
Yeah.
I'm a marketer or I'm a researcher?
I'd actually say a marketer. Even though I work in research, I would say a marketer, but I would like to be provided with the correct research.
A marketing conference or a branding conference?
Say branding conference. Reason for that is obviously the area I work in, there's a lot of branding decisions being made. And obviously, yeah, it does take into consideration some of the marketing aspect. But I think from a branding conference, I would reach more people making the decisions on packaging.
Qualitative or quantitative?
Both have their places, but I guess I'm going to say quantitative just because if I wanted to ask a qualitative question, I could still do that in a quantitative type of way with a lot of people. Whereas if I went solely qualitative, unless I had an unlimited budget, then I would probably say qualitative, but quantitative because you can get a bigger picture of the market. But that's a hard question. Yeah, there's both got their pros and cons. And we always suggest research actually with both, because there's always parts of even my study, there was a question on there with how would you improve packaging redesign research? And you can't ask that in a quantitative way.
Focus groups or gut feelings?
That's like too negative. If we're talking about redesign research,
yeah,
in only the fact that you will save money is, I would say, gut feeling, because you're saving money. But really, they're both bad things to actually do. I shouldn't say that's how much I don't like focus groups, but they can really take you down the wrong path. Don't recommend if you have to choose between those two. I'd ask for a third option.
Collaboration with another researcher or creative that you would like to do?
Obviously, I love working with Jenny Romanik. Collaborating with her is always fun because it's like a different mindset of thinking.
And finally, great market researchers are born or great market researchers are made?
I'm a firm believer in you work hard and then the results come. I can't say a great market researcher would be born. They're made, and you have to have some type of intuitive knowledge to be able to just sit down and say, okay, we're going to do this study for these reasons and find out something that hopefully can help whole industry.
Do performing focus groups guarantee positive packaging redesign outcomes?
Actually, I shouldn't say it guarantees negative, but it's highly correlated with not very successful outcomes at all. They do have their place. They're great for idea generation and might be even ad testing, for example, like looking at what the maybe key message is. But you can do a lot of that with other forms of research. And if you're going to a focus group to talk about this pack redesign, you're going to say things about this pack redesign, but really they're probably not going to be what you would normally type of think about. Like you wouldn't comment on the font of a pack that you normally purchase, but if you're going to a focus group and they ask you, oh, what do you think about this font? You're going to make up some type of answer to obviously keep that facilitator happy. So yeah, focus groups aren't too good.
And what research methods do you suggest to help designers make informed decisions?
There's two types of research that you can do. You can do one type of research to inform the concept itself. Mm. That's where we do suggest just understanding what represents the brand and keeping those things very similar, if not changing them at all. And then the second stage of research is then looking at, you've got these concepts, you might have like three, like hopefully you don't have 5 to 10. But if you've narrowed it down to three, then you can look at, of these concepts, which one might be the better of them. We always do suggest benchmarking against the current pack. I would recommend something like a shelf test, but not necessarily focusing exactly on that pack. Asking them just to, okay, this is an online store. This is the detergent category. Which one would you buy? And you would change that without actually telling them, and then have a look at the results yourself to be able to see what that actually impact is of that change you're making. And if it's like pretty similar to, that current pack, you might think, yep, that's great because we redesigned our pack maybe to unify our range more because we've bought so many different variants in maybe over time and we've changed a lot of stuff and just things get messy as time goes on with different things. I'm sure you've got something in your house that you're like, why did I ever buy that? It doesn't fit in. It's pretty much the same with the design of packaging. Someone's probably thought somewhere, oh, that looks really good for that reason. And then you look back and that's really different to all of our other range. So it might be a matter of cleaning it up. And if you just don't tell consumers you're doing that and get them to just do a simulated type of shopping task, then you'll be able to actually see those differences. Key thing is don't put consumers in the mindset of thinking about packaging more than what they would, because then that's when strange things start to happen because we'll leave the design up to the designers. We won't ask consumers that, okay, do they prefer a slightly curly font compared to a like half curly font to a font that's on an angle compared to straight? We'll leave that fun stuff up to the designers to create those concepts. And we'll just let the consumers pick what one they actually think they would buy based on that kind of whole identity.
To what extent can consumers identify newly redesigned modern packaging?
This is a question that hopefully doesn't make too many designers upset. 29% of cases that consumers could identify that modern packaging, it's very low. So like it's a 1 in 3, right? Worse than chance, actually, because we actually only showed them the old and the new packs. It was like they picked the old one. But the reason probably for that is because they would have picked what one they thought was familiar to them, which you would think that because these are old and new packs, that the new pack that's been launched into the market would be more familiar to them because that was the one in the market. But they're actually picking the pack that they thought was more modern, that the one was out, like had been replaced. We last obviously 2 years. So we looked at packaging in the US and the UK and asked consumers which ones were more modern. Obviously used a sliding scale. So it wasn't just like this was more modern, this wasn't. We actually showed them just the pack by itself, the old one, and asked them on a scale of 0 to 7, how modern they rated that. Then they did like a distractor task. Then they saw another lot of packaging and this was the actual more modern one. And we asked them again on a scale of 0 to 7, how modern they thought it was. And yeah, it was obviously completely randomized, so they weren't just getting old ones in the same order, but they did see both packs, so we could see if they'd bought the brand before. Like it took out those buyer effects that we might see. And yeah, it was 29% of cases.
Are packaging redesigns more likely to succeed as an evolution rather than a revolution?
Help yourself by doing a pack redesign that's an evolution, not a revolution. You're keeping it more similar than going for that big change, even though it looks like you're doing more if you make more changes. If you make less changes, it makes it easier for consumers to find you. Sometimes being lazy is being successful. So you're more familiar. It's an evolution. You're keeping what represents the brand quite strong, and that then will help you be more successful. But maybe then you can think about like beyond you're wanting to make a change. Doesn't always have to be on the pack. It could be, okay, we're now going to use the packaging in a different way in communication. And that could be something that if you want to make your mark on a brand that you can do rather than just the easiest way sometimes that when I was chatting to a lot of marketers, when they commented on reasons why they thought other people made changes, it was because marketers got bored.
Wow.
Yeah, they were quite honest. They were said, okay, we think that a lot of these changes don't need to be happening and it might be because marketers have got to get bored or they want to make their mark on a brand. And there's obviously other ways that they can do that. Just leave the packaging alone. Evolutions rather than revolutions, that's always, yeah.
Was it challenging to address both designers and marketers in your research?
Yeah, it was super challenging because when things go right, everyone loves to take like the credit for it. Talking to marketing and designers when things didn't go well, this is when we saw what they were expecting of each other. Like the design team didn't provide us this, or the marketing team didn't provide us the information that we needed. And then the marketers were like, well, they gave us bad concepts. We didn't do anything wrong.
If you could wave a magic wand and fix two or three things in the design industry that will help you sleep better at night, what would that look like?
Just limited the list to two or three. Well, the first one is just like everyone do research that helps them understand what represents the brand on the pack. That's something that it's just so easy to do. Understanding how you're measuring your branding elements in terms of the additional analysis that I do on a daily basis, like looking at that mental competition, just having that structure, that would be that magic thing that I would like to fix overnight is no longer the battle between marketing and designers. At the end of the day, marketing and designers both want to reach that same goal. It's to have packaging that fulfills whatever that objective of that brief is. And one way that they can do that is having that structure in place. Is these things represent the brand, keep them similar, or maybe these things represent the brand and we're missing something. We could actually start building a new asset also. If I could wave a magic wand, I wouldn't completely abolish focus groups. I would just maybe not use like 7 out of 10 times with a redesign. Maybe it's like 1 in 10. Just get people to understand there's a lot more other methods out there than focus groups that will help you understand which concept is better than another. But that is going to take years, I guess. But just to train people on how people actually think. If you're a super lazy marketer, I guess, in the redesign space and you thought, okay, I'm not going to change my packaging at all for 10 years, it's probably actually going to be better for you than going through all the iterations. But yeah, we won't say that marketers need to be lazy. But yeah, if you were just consistent, that would be one thing I would like great to see. Magic wand.
If you could just take a pill and learn any subject, anything, what would it be?
I'd love to just create some type of mechanism that you could plug concepts into in the redesign area and it would give you the exact outcome based on the exact amount of market research, advertising support that you gave it, and it gave you this perfect outcome of what that pack design would be.
I will be an early adopter.
Yes.
What is the most important thing on your to-do list for your professional life? What is your next adventure?
Obviously, as a part of the work that we do at the Ehrenberg Bass Institute is disseminating knowledge. How brands grow for executives is a 4-day experience aimed at people in the C-suite. It will give you an experience that helps you make decisions based on evidence-based principles and how you can then utilize these for growth within your company. Byron Sharp will be there, I assume Jenny Romanek, and like key researchers in those areas will be there and be able to answer questions on how you can actually grow your brands. The first one's in Singapore in April and then France in June with the US in September. The next adventure in terms of research is I'm still looking at a lot of redesigns, looking at individual areas of that. So for example, like if you're looking at, say, modernization, likability, and familiarity, how they interact with each other. Then going like, how do brands, if they maybe have a face on their pack or don't, how does that help a brand stand out in the shopping environment? So it's like the next step now of looking at that more implementation of when redesigns happen. And then obviously it does take a long time, but that's the next step. I guess the implementation of packaging and understanding then how it can still be successful.
Thanks, Will, for lighting up the world of package design with your insights. Your knowledge is our guide to better design decisions. You are our go-to GPS for design excellence.
Thank you. Hopefully your listeners make some, I guess, good packaging decisions. It's a hard area.
I hope you have enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. You can check the episode notes for all the relevant links. I also invite you to follow me on Instagram and on my website, branderman.design. Follow the podcast in your favorite app so you don't miss the next episode of Branderman, the podcast where we try to uncover how to make a positive impact on consumers, the market, and society through package design.